Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Before I introduce today's guest, here's a question for you. Are you your own worst enemy? It's almost a national pastime to beat ourselves up over real or imagined imperfections. But here's good news. Noted author and workshop leader Jude Bijou informs that you can silence your tyrant of self-doubt through four steps. And here they are. Step one, write down the most common destructive things you say to yourself, like I'm so stupid or I blew it again. Step two, contradict those tired old negative messages and write down more positive and objectively true messages, like I'm doing the best I can or life is for learning and I learn from my mistakes. Step three, relentlessly repeat your new positive thoughts, especially whenever you're judging yourself harshly or feel let down. And step four, shower yourself with kindness in the form of self-appreciation. Compliment yourself for your talents, abilities, and efforts. As Jude puts it, beating yourself up for not living up to impossible standards is a dead end that leads only to point misery. And at first you may be skeptical, but persistent self-affirmation does work wonders. Want to learn a whole lot more about turning self-criticism into self-affirmation? May I suggest Jude Bijou's acclaimed book, Attitude Reconstruction, A Blueprint to Building a Better Life. You can check it out on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, or Jude's own website, AttitudeReconstruction.com. And while there, preview Jude's powerful 5-day Attitude Reconstruction Workshop coming up on August 9th through the 14th on a beautiful resort island in British Columbia. At the workshop, you'll discover how to overcome sadness, anger, and fear, and to use 5 and 8 tools for a better life. Once again, Jude's website address is AttitudeReconstruction.com. Last month, we talked about marriage and romance, our male and female connections, and last week, we launched a series of programs on spirituality, moving beyond our finite capacity to make connection with God, the universal intelligence, however you may label the higher power. And my next guest, Christopher Alan Anderson, makes a fascinating connection between gender and spirituality. He believes the balance between man and woman is the center of life. And he also contends that man and woman are meant to be united spiritually, and that each relationship that lives with this truth brings love to the world. His philosophy on life certainly is unique and challenges some of the traditional views on religion, personal responsibility, and sovereignty. And Chris Anderson is here to clarify his views and why they are relevant to us, both in our marriages and in any non-casual man-woman relationships. And Christopher Alan Anderson is a noted speaker and author of more than 20 books. He also leads workshops to help individuals live a life of leadership, creativity, and joy. He began writing in 1971, and his first writings were published 30 years ago in 1985. And his self-defined mission statement is to bring men and women together, not certainly a worthwhile mission, I should say. And he's author of the brand new book published just last month titled The Prime Movers, The Sovereign Sea of Man and Woman. And he also has a recent screenplay that was published just last fall called The Case Against Man and Woman. And hello, Chris, and welcome. It's indeed an honor to have a philosopher, poet, and prolific writer of your stature on our program.
Well, thank you. That's quite an introduction. I appreciate that.
Well, how does your concept of universal intelligence or a supreme being differ from traditional Christian and Jewish monotheistic doctrine of one sovereign Lord, God and Father, creator of all?
Well, it basically says that there's not a singular oneness in the universe. When we think of God, we've actually pinned onto that, that God is the one, the oneness, the ultimate creator. And when you think about it, and this is a mental exercise I actually went through many, many years ago, and that was there can be an order, there can be one order, and I would argue that there is. But we, when we get into the actual action of creation, there's a two. And there's whenever there's a force, there's always a counterforce. And the action of creation is always the use of force.
Yes.
And then there's a counterforce, the old physics action-reaction type of thing.
Yeah.
And so in my on the website, when it talks about me, I said, and what I'm trying to do, I'm actually trying to create the man-woman, we call it man-woman procreation, if you will. I call it spiritual procreation.
Yeah.
I say mankind has yet to distinguish the two sexes on the spiritual level.
Huh.
And that's what we haven't done. We still have a singular, I mean, we have the two sexes in physical life, maybe to a degree in mental life, but we collapse back into this oneness when we think of the spiritual level instead of thinking of, well, the prime movers, for example, thinking of God the Father and God the Mother.
And when we think of the creative force, it's so much beyond our limited human capacity to imagine that putting it all in a narrow little box and calling it God the Father, it doesn't make a lot of sense, obviously, that there's much more to that. Like you say, there's got to be action and reaction and much more than just that old-fashioned notion of the divine father with a long beard up.
Well, let me say two things to that. One, when we do single out God the Father, because not all the universe is of the Father or the male force, that we automatically diminish the opposite, the equal and opposite force of mother or woman.
True.
And that has run historically through our religions and philosophies, this kind of superior, the man is the superior. And, we see that quite playing out right now in the world. With a lot of killing and damage being done in the world, because we don't have this balance within ourselves. That, and in the Prime Movers book, I do say if there is a God the Father, there must also be a God the Mother.
Yeah.
Not a God the Mother as a secondary existence to God the Father, but as an equal and opposite primary existence to God the Father. And the other thing I'd like to add to that is, if you think about it, each moment there is this father love, and there is this mother love. Now we could say male love or female love or man love, woman love, but at each moment that is going back and forth, and there are different types of love. We actually have two loves in the world. We have this father love, which is absolutely necessary, and we have this complement mother love that is absolutely necessary. And my point about this is that You can't just have one of them. You have to have both. In fact, you can't even conceptualize one without the other.
Yeah.
Like breathing, you can't say inhalation. you automatically, there's exhalation right at the same moment. And so I'm saying that right at the same moment, there's father or male or whatever, there's female and vice versa.
Well, how is this failure to recognize this by humankind to recognize this balance over history, and why has that created such a problem? And why enlightened humans can't move forward together? How has that really affected history and all the problems we have?
Well, when we don't understand this balance, that there's actually this process going on, a dividing, uniting two. Whenever that is somehow imbalanced, it's like if we just say God the Father, for example. It would be an imbalance if we just said God the Mother, quite frankly.
Yeah.
And I criticize feminism on that.
Yeah.
but if you immediately think of a teeter-totter.
Yeah.
And a teeter-totter is perfectly balanced to both sides. But if actually the teeter-totter in life goes up and down. But if it goes up and stays there, and you have one high side and one low side, and you have one claiming superiority over the other.
Yeah.
If I'm superior to you, I also can claim special privileges for me.
Yeah.
And the idea of our mutual consent, or each of us having a choice, goes out the window. And speaking of our own country, we were the first country in the world to try and bring this mutual consent to our governance.
Yeah.
Hasn't been perfect yet, but you can imagine if one part, one religion or one race or one nation or like the divine race or something claims they're the superior one or they're the chosen people or they're the king and the royalty, that it automatically makes a master-slave situation. Because
one side applies with man and woman. If man is always has deemed themselves to be the sovereign or superior, that obviously creates the same type of imbalance you're saying.
It does. And the follow-up to that is that whenever you have an imbalance, it takes some type of force to hold it in place because it's not the natural order. And that's where force comes in. And, you know, we don't need to force people in the world.
No.
There's nothing wrong with them having their choices in the world. We don't need to force them.
Well, within the premise that energy is flowing from a spiritual connection of male and female, and that's at the center of the universe, what are the appropriate roles for men and women? I know you point that out, that there are different appropriate roles for the two.
Yes, and I'll mention that one of my workshops, The Truth Process for Men and Women, is especially for that. And I should also mention that women are somewhat queasy of roles, good feminist argument, because roles historically have been used against them.
Yeah,
their role is not as important, or they're confined to their role, and they must be that. And so we're not talking about that, but we're looking at what is innate to our spirits as a man and a woman, or as a father and a mother, that's different, and yet a question that's asked in that program is, what is it that a man has that a woman doesn't have, but a woman absolutely needs?
Yeah.
And a man can give it to her, and vice versa. What is it that a woman has that a man must have, but he can't get it for himself? And that's why we need each other.
Yeah.
I mean, if we didn't have something that's essential to the other, we probably wouldn't care about each other at all.
Yeah, I like in your, I think in your book it was, where you mentioned the ship of the universe, that man is the motor and woman the rudder.
Well,
what do you mean by that?
That's a difference. That's a difference. In fact, that in the Truth Process program, we go down and list all the kind of the differences that are similar differences. Like I say, man divides the one and woman unites the two.
Yeah.
So woman is on the unity side of the universe. Man is on the division or individualizing side of the universe. Now, both of these are absolutely necessary things to happen, but they're not superior to each other.
No.
They're just not superior to each other. And so woman actually, as I'm talking about it, we can think of her as the universal and man as the individual.
Yeah.
And woman as she's like the receptor. She takes the man into herself.
Yeah.
She's the womb, the space from which they unite together, a new life grows and then is divided out from herself. So if I could read a passage here from a book, can I do that?
Yeah, certainly.
Okay, this is it's not from the Prime Mover, it's from an earlier book called Channeling the Eternal Woman, but this quote is also in the Prime Movers. And this is from the Eternal Woman. She says, "Thank you. I am the Eternal Woman. I am not a god. I am a woman. I am the female soul within every woman. As a woman, I stand with man. Actually, I stand between man and child. I am the link between man and child." I mean, think about that. Without woman, what is the connective side of it? You know, I am the link between man and child. I am the space between man and child.
Yeah.
I am the death of all life and the life of all death. From a man dying inside of me, so our child is born out of me. I am what you might call the field, frame, zero point, space, opening, womb, or void. But I am not death. Rather, I give life to death. I bring life potential to all things. I connect all things within me. With this, I am love. Without me, there would never be love. All women know this about me because they know it about themselves.
Yeah, that's great.
So you know, the woman is the connective side, the man's the dividing or individualizing side. You know, the man secures and the woman reproduces. And we kind of all know that and feel that. I mean, you know, a man has to do his part too. He has to hold the line. And
you know, what's interesting is that, you know, I agree with a lot of what you're saying, but modern culture seems like it's almost moving in the opposite direction of the core argument that man and woman are meant to be united spiritually, because we're looking at greater acceptance of gay marriage and sex change, you know, the Caitlyn Jenner stuff going around all over the place, gay and lesbian parents, tolerance of alternative lifestyles. Does all this portend more and deeper problems for humanity going forward? I mean, we seem to be talking about less union between male and female, not more.
Well, I think two things about that. I think we haven't really got to what I would call the metaphysical understanding of male and female. As I say, you know, as I said at the beginning, that we haven't yet understood sexuality in a spiritual sense. And so it's like been on second tier, and we've had other religions and so forth on first tier, which weren't really balanced. So we're going through, in fact, we're going through a whole cultural shift from masculinism, which was, I defined as opposite but not equal, and to feminism, which I define as equal but not opposite. So feminism actually leaves out the difference.
Yeah.
There's this critical difference between man and woman that must be there for them to actually live and survive and love and create
so
the lineage of life.
Feminism seeing to be women that want to be men rather than recognize the wonderful role that they play as women, and equal, like you say, it should be an equal role, but it's certainly not inferior. But, you know, when the feminists want to take over as men, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
I don't know that they want to be men, but they certainly want to have their own authenticity.
Yeah.
And the way it's been given that they can have their own authenticity of themselves alone.
Yeah.
And that's where I disagree with them. I think there's a lot of fundamental points to feminism, especially on the equality side.
Yeah.
But you can have your authenticity in relationship to a man, as a man can have his authenticity in relationship to a woman.
Yeah.
And the problem that I have with the LGBT scenario is that it's just not procreative to life.
No, it isn't.
I mean, you can't begin a life from that. You can't. It's actually a separation from the sexual and the procreative. That's really what's going on there.
Yeah.
And they're out to, you might say, get rid of that dichotomy, get rid of this whole idea that there's a gender binary, a gender polarity, and open up the gates to all lots of other different types of things. But when you do that, you lose procreation.
Yeah.
You lose father love and you lose mother love.
Yeah.
And if you lose procreation as your guide to sexuality, then you actually lose what is fundamental and what is beautiful in sexuality.
Yeah. Over time,
that's
we won't
why
be
you
around
end up,
anymore either if we don't procreate.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've been to a gay parade and it moves, you know, I would call it perverse myself.
Yeah.
And Freud said the same thing. When we abandon the reproductive function, we move to the perverse. See, that's the line of it. You know, even for an elderly couple, if, you know, they've already had their family and maybe they are coming to another relationship, that spiritual, that procreative essence is still there in their spirits.
Yeah.
And, well, and you lose that. Not only do you lose life, but you turn more into the perverse. And, you know, and the other point about that, the gay pride parade, you know, they come together and they're really saying to each other, I don't want you or need you.
Yeah.
And that's just not true. I would say to any gay person that reflect on it and reflect, meditate, pray, and commune with in spirit with woman.
Yeah.
And I bet, I've done this, by the way, but I bet that you will find, if you work on this, you will find in your heart of hearts, if you're a man, that you need a woman, and if you're a woman, you need a man.
Yeah.
Because you just can't break the complementarity apart.
No.
Just man or just woman. You can't do it.
No. Let's get down to where the rubber meets the road for our middle-aged listening audience. How do those in our late 40s, 50s, and 60s form a spiritual connection with a person of the opposite sex? Let's talk about a few examples. What about those of us in established marriages, if the romance and physical spark is long gone, and we're mostly parents, housemates, and hopefully close friends? How do we unite spiritually with your spouse when you're not united romantically like you once were?
Well, seeing that that's what you want to do,
yeah,
it's probably, you gotta just look at that other as the most special.
Yeah,
that's and perfect as well, as spiritually perfect. You know, a lot of the sameness starts to become smallness and carping on each other.
Yeah.
So you gotta overstep that and go, no, you're special, you're perfect, you're spiritually perfect, as am I. Our balance has purpose.
Yeah, that's
so. We have to reestablish purpose. We have to reestablish just talking, walking, holding hands. Reestablish the fundamental romance of first love when you were doing that, walking, eating a snow cone, whatever we did back then, together, and just being together. You got to do that every have that moment or moments every day.
And recognize what's special about your spouse being female, or your wife recognizing you being a male, and how that's unique, and how it's equal but unique, and you each have your spiritual connection. And I can see what you're saying there.
That's the miracle. That's the miracle of the moment. In our opposition, we actually find the miracle of love that we've all been looking for.
Yeah.
And once you have that, it's like it's breathtaking. It's beauty.
And, well, what if you're single, never married, widowed, or divorced? How do you feel a spiritual connection with a person of the opposite sex? Where do you look for that person? If say you're not really, you're yet married again, or maybe never, or not right away anyway. But how do you look for a spiritual connection with someone of the opposite sex when you're single like that?
Well, I'm not going to tell you to go on the internet, but I will tell you to go within yourself.
Yeah.
I have this little exercise I do in one of the programs, and it's communing with that other sexual opposite of you. And we just go in ourselves, just a deep kind of meditation, and to where a man just feels a woman. He communes with her. He talks to her almost like a prayer. He talks to her and then lets her speak back to him. And at first, he may not hear anything. But over time, you can actually hear. You can be in a dialogue. And same with woman. You talk to your man. You tell him your concerns, your needs, your wants, how you're lonely if you are. And it's almost like talking to God, but you're talking to your, what I call your eternal other half, your opposite.
Yeah.
Your eternal other half. And it's a wonderful thing to do. It's a wonderful exercise. Just start, 5 minutes a day, like a prayer, talking to this other, and commune, and let that grow within you, and your own beauty will grow inside, your own love will deepen, and your own, when you go out in the world and meet people, your own connection and compassion will grow.
Yeah, if you go out in the world looking to make connection with someone of the opposite sex, not necessarily, in a dating relationship or romantic relationship, but you just seek to make that connection, and you're aware of this male and female spiritual connection that creates all being, then I think you probably would start developing some real worthwhile relationships that way.
Well, as a man, they're. Women are really very much interested in a man who knows how to love or knows how to touch her or hold her and be compassionate with her.
Yeah.
So I'm just speaking as a man. But that's the type of thing I get from this exercise of communing with woman inside myself. And it's a wonderful thing, I think.
Yeah, it sounds like it certainly is.
So there's difficulties in all these things you're talking about, but I'm just kind of trying to give a little point of where one can start.
Yeah, this one very interesting. In your book, you talk about how the equal and opposite framework creates a paradigm for personal growth and for wealth creation. What in the world does that paradigm have to do with the law of attraction and wealth creation, as you point out in your book?
Well, it's basically the law of attraction. Whatever we're putting out from us comes back to us, the law of attraction.
Yeah.
So if you're putting out from yourself the other of you, I talked about metaphysical self, metaphysical other. If you're putting out that the other is divine, the other is beautiful and perfect and so forth, that's what comes back to you. And it's the balance that gives us this frame.
Yeah.
This equal and opposite balance of all things actually gives us the frame to step over our own victimization, it's your fault, blame, hate, struggle, all this stuff. And when we walk out in this balance and this inner perfection and this beauty, and we walk out into the world, and that's what we see, guess what comes back to us?
Yeah.
And when we put that into our work, our products, our relationships, that's what comes back to us. I mean, this to me is the solution to our problem of war.
Yeah.
You know, the way to get rid of war is through love.
Yeah, they always say love, put women in charge and we'll get rid of war.
No. But love ye one another was said a long time ago.
Yeah. That sort of was women like Margaret Thatcher and some of the other leaders in the past haven't been all that different from men in terms of, I know she went to war in the Falklands anyway. But
yeah.
Well, in your latest book, The Prime Mover is the Sovereignty of Men and Women. What do you mean by sovereignty? I love that title.
Well, it's because we've often heard the word sovereignty, that we're like in our country, in our founding, that the people were the sovereign.
Yeah.
And my point is that we're not really individuals. We're co-connected together. And so I'm saying that our sovereignty really comes from a co-sovereignty or sovereignty.
Yeah.
So it's the balance again. We haven't really cemented our idea of sovereignty in the balance of the two. And look where our government is today. It's almost we're almost taken over again, for Pete's sakes. I mean, everything's run by executive order now, not just at the presidential level, but try and work with your local county. Good luck.
Yeah, there's so much dispute everywhere up and down the line in the government these days.
What has happened to our sovereignty? So I'm saying we must start from a co-sovereignty or sovereignty. And this gets into a framework of freedom and our mutual consent and our inalienable rights and all that, which I go into the book. And, that's a different part of the book.
Yeah.
But without that, without this balance, we just can't get to our own inalienable rights, the meaning of them, the freedom of them, and have peace.
Yeah.
Because
Where would we go to preview and purchase your book? Is that available widely, or I know it's just off the press? But
I have a website. Actually, if you look up Christopher Allen Anderson and type in The Prime Movers at Amazon or most any of those things, it'll come up on.
Yeah, I found it on Amazon, so it's there.
My website is www.manandwomanbalance.com.
Yeah.
The end is spelled out, A-N-D.
So
I have a listing of all my books there, and you can just, there's links to click on that will take you right to Amazon or the other ones as well.
Yeah. I also liked your that screenplay you wrote, The Case Against Man and Woman. It's
that's actually about one man standing up for what I've been talking about.
Standing up for
man and woman and what he's, what he goes through and the trial against him for holding that view.
Yeah, I noticed on your website, manandwomanbalance.com, you have a whole bunch of other interesting resources like meditation cards, workshops, short talks, articles, coaching sessions, a lot of things, very interesting items available there. Some of them cost money, I guess. Some of them are even free resources. So
there's a lot there. I have a web designer who's done just a wonderful job.
And the theme of them all is man and woman balance.
Right. And the key, the whole thing, is the definition of balance being equal and opposite.
Yeah, that's such a wonderful
it's
balance.
It's not an or, it's connected by an and, A-N-D.
Yeah.
So, and that's man and woman are connected by an and, A-N-D.
Well, with our finite human knowledge and intelligence, it's not impossible for any of us to have a complete and unbiased impression of God, the universal creative force. But Chris Allen Anderson has presented a highly feasible concept of the almighty creative force, and that obviously is a combination of two aspects of male and female that fuses two into one and creates, procreates everything that's on the in the universe. And I urge every one of you to keep an open mind toward your spiritual procreation and the potential all of us have to unite spiritually in creative union with the opposite sex the way it was intended to be. And thank you, Chris Anderson, for your thought-provoking observations.
Thank you, Roy.
At the beginning of today's program, we talked about Jude Bijou's formula for turning self-criticism, it's a four-step formula, into self-affirmation, self-criticism into self-affirmation. And before closing the program today, I'd like to spend a bit more time on this transformation. Quite simply, revising your primary outlook on the present and the future from negative to positive is the key to midlife renewal and to ensuring that middle age is your best age. You may recall that Jude's first step to removing self-doubt was writing down the most destructive things you say to yourself. And I suggest you take this one step further and prepare a negative inventory of everything present or absent in your life today that makes you feel unfulfilled and unhappy. It may be something you miss or something that's present all too often. And wait, you protest. I want to bring joy, positive life goals, and a sense of purpose into my life. Why in the world would I concentrate on the negatives? Well, my answer to that is simple. To win the battle against negative thoughts and emotions, you first need to understand your enemy. And if, for example, one of the destructive things I repeatedly say to myself is, I'm stupid, I should take the time and effort to understand when and where this negative self-image came from. What is the earliest moment in my life when I first concluded that I wasn't very smart? And this often goes way back to early childhood, based on a thoughtless remark of a parent, teacher, or other adult. Secondly, what were the circumstances surrounding the birth of this negative self-image? What event, perhaps insignificant, led the other person to make a hurtful remark? Was I, in fact, acting stupid, given my age and level of knowledge at the time? And did the circumstances and my ignorance back then have anything at all to do with the person I am today? Third, who was responsible for holding on to my negative self-image today? Do loved ones, friends, and co-workers relate to me as a stupid individual? Do I tell them up front that I'm not very smart? Is there any hard evidence that I'm not smart enough to choose wisely, enjoy my life fully, and live responsibly? And finally, what is my response? If I do consider myself stupid, do I fight back and attempt to gain knowledge? If I'm willing to accept that I'm not as bright as some of my contemporaries, what positive steps can I take to compensate? For example, I could demonstrate kindness, lend support, and cooperate with those who have bright ideas that I support, backup and a supporter to those geniuses that come up with the ideas. Well, the bottom line is that my perception of weakness or a deficiency, is it based on fact? And if it is, what positive steps can I take to overcome the weakness or at least compensate for it? Identifying those destructive negative thoughts that keep popping up, examining origin and whether or not they are valid, and if so, how can you compensate for them? That'll go a long way in driving away fear, bitterness, envy, and regret. In many cases, you'll discover that negative thoughts were implanted in your subconscious by someone who knows almost nothing about the authentic you, perhaps a person not even in your life anymore. Sometimes the negative image applied to you back when, but it doesn't make in the least describe the person you are today or the person you can grow into tomorrow. So always consider how you've changed since that idea was implanted. And if you conclude to some degree that a negative aspect of you is true, and I guess all of us have some negative aspects, the one thing not to do is obsess over it and let it dominate your emotions, ruin your whole day, and effectively your whole life. As I see it, you have three logical choices, two of which make sense, the other absolutely no sense. Your choice one is to strive to eliminate the circumstance from your life. If you're overweight, seek expert advice, then begin diet and exercise. And if you hate your job, you could implement a game plan to start searching for a better one. You know, there's a lot of options. We can, I firmly believe, find someone to pay us to have a good time if we're in the job we love. Second logical choice is to accept the circumstances beyond your immediate control, but strive to improve your response. So I don't like being a guy who's only 5'3". Is this really that important for my success and happiness going forward? How in any way does a short stature limit my possibilities? And next time someone calls you shorty, just smile and respond. The best gifts come in small packages. It's all about attitude, isn't it? And the third choice definitely makes no sense to me. That's resign yourself to negative circumstances and continue to be fearful, bitter, and resentful until the Grim Reaper finally arrives to end your misery. That doesn't sound like a great second half of life, does it? Well, when you see the negative thoughts for what they are, some of the most persistent ones may go away naturally. They simply aren't worth your time and attention. You'll discover that, and they may not even be valid. For those that remain, taking time out to launch a solid game plan to overcome or compensate for the genuine negatives in your life will help create a positive experience for you. Think how great you'll feel, for example, when you master a new diet and exercise program, drop those 20 extra pounds you don't want, and stay in shape. Equally important, from here on, every time a negative thought crosses your mind, you will recognize it for what it is, just another version of the false notion that you're destined to be miserable for the rest of your days and that you're not in control, that there's nothing you can do about it, and no one needs those kind of thoughts. So when we remove negative thinking from our agenda, what do we replace it with? How do we fill the void? Well, come up with and begin routinely reciting positive yet objectively true statements that just about anyone can make, like, I'm learning something new every day. We certainly all should be receptive to that. I love others, desire to serve them, and I am a great friend to have. Or how about, I'm well on my way to my ideal weight and fitness. I have a diet exercise plan in place to stay thin and healthy. All these are the kind of positive ideas to keep in mind. Another thing to do is inventory your many strengths and advantages, your gifts from God, then verbally recite them over and over, especially when you're down or you're judging yourself harshly. Note, we'll talk about inventorying and taking advantage of your wonderful strengths, talents, and advantages on next week's show, and you may be pleasantly surprised by the depth of talent you possess. You simply need to bring more of it out. For now, crazy as it may seem, simply begin to recognize your negative thoughts, where they're coming from, and whether they make sense. With practice, you'll squash them, and your joy and purpose in life will improve 180 degrees. I promise. I know that from experience. This week, absolutely no regrets from the past. That's such a pointless exercise. Instead, begin to think like this. Sure, I've made mistakes, but knowing now what I didn't know then, I'm prepared to make the right choices going forward. Asking for help when needed and cooperating with others, I'm fully capable of enjoying life to the fullest, leaving a legacy, and accomplishing my fondest dreams. For an entire chapter and two comprehensive self-help exercises on recognizing determining causes, then banishing, correcting, or compensating for every negative, I recommend my book, A Midlife Challenge Wake Up, by me, Roy C. Richards. That's A Midlife Challenge Wake Up. Quite simply, you need to honor yourself before you can effectively love and serve others. You need to love and honor yourself. Isn't it high time you reverse course and take that long overdue journey from a negative to a positive dominant outlook on life? You can preview and purchase my book on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, or on my website, MiddleAgeRenewal.com, where you also can receive a free gift. And that's our show for this week. Tune in next week when our guest will answer the perplexing question, does faith in God make sense? See you then. Bye-bye for now from Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, MiddleAgeRenewal.com.